Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Wow.
Here's John Williams.
Thank you, Amita. Thank you, Eric. Hey, it's John. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio. We're here weekdays until 3 and Saturdays till noon. That's 10 a.m. until noon on social media. It's WGN King John. Kind of blew up the interwebs today with my Facebook post. Did you see the Facebook post of the girl? The gymnast from UCLA. Eric, I know you're about to change out that seat, but did you watch the video of the gymnast from UCLA who...
Is that the one that had that, like, amazing floor routine, right?
Yes.
I have not watched it yet. I just read about it.
I did, too, and I thought, and I saw it trending, and I thought, no, I don't get time for that. I don't need to watch gymnastics. And then, somehow or another, I found myself watching it, and I posted it because it is the most joyful and fantastic thing you'll ever see. You look at this and you go, wow. In fact, I believe my post was, humans can do this? What this young woman does from UCLA is a floor routine, and she does some of those amazing aerial flips and stunts and jumps, and she's just got such an infectious, charismatic face. It's a great smile. She's an attractive young lady, and she's very fit, and she's just so selling it. And then at the end, she does one of these tumbling runs where she goes boing, 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 and she goes into the air, I'm just going to guesstimate here, 75 feet. And then she comes down at about 47 miles an hour into the splits.
Oh, wait, I did see the end of this. Okay, I'm watching the rest of it now, but now, when you mentioned that she comes down into the splits, I did see it. Yes, it is. It's incredible.
And then paramedics did not rush onto the field. I mean, and then she was okay. That was the plan. It's unbelievable.
Well, and I'm also watching her teammates here behind her. I mean, they're rocking out, too.
Eric, that is the nicest thing about that video.
Oh, they're cheering her on like crazy.
It is so sweet. And so when I said that, I then posted again. I thought, oh, you know what? As much as we love the girl who's the focus of this, what gets lost is the positivity coming from her teammates. They're snapping and clapping and dancing. They're so there for her. And I said, you know, isn't that nice? And somebody posted, somebody who knows about gymnastics in Chicago, and they said, you know what? That's the way it is at gymnastics meets. You never see that in the Olympics. It's all taut faces and worry, and you know, it's just so stressful. But if you go to a gymnastics meet, one of our posters said on Facebook, you'll see the girls, maybe the guys, but the girls supporting each other, cheering each other on, dancing in unison on the side. I mean, those girls knew her routine, and they were just there. It's the best thing.
Her face during it is incredible, too. I mean, her facial expressions, I mean, it really gets you into it.
Oh, yeah.
I almost want to start dancing.
Do not, but you're absolutely right. And as a parent of a kid who was in music and one who was in sports, I think, oh, how happy, how proud her parents must be to see their kid do something that well. And to exude so much confidence and happiness and, frankly, sass.
A lot of sass.
Selling that sass, boy. Nice to hear you, Eric. Thanks for jumping in there in the WGN Radio newsroom. So that video, if you know you want to put a smile on your face for some reason today, that's on my Facebook page. It's also on Earth. And if you just look for me on social media, I'm WGN King John. Then after that, it's almost the antithesis. I said, here's an article or a video of President Trump with the fast food buffet they put out for the Clemson Tigers. And I said, what is your fast food fantasy? Because I've thought about this before, maybe more than I should. We don't go to fast food restaurants at my house. But when I get to, say I'm driving alone, and I say, aha, no one else is around, I can swing through a McDonald's or a Burger King. I will. Maybe once a year, twice a year, maybe I get that luxury. But I've often thought that if, you know, I had my druthers, I'd get the Burger King Whopper, cheese, no ketchup. And by the way, in this fantasy, my coronary, my arteries are fine. They can handle it. So I get the Whopper, cheese, no ketchup. But then I get the Arby's curly fries. I also get the McDonald's fries. I get the KFC coleslaw, which is one of my favorite foods. I get a Wendy's Frosty, and then I get an Icy Coke at McDonald's. Those, in my life's experience, have been some of the most rewarding menu items from fast food restaurants. So the president, because of the shutdown, said that they have too many furloughed federal workers, and so they can't serve a nice dinner for the Clemson Tigers rather than delay their visit to the White House until everybody's back to work. Let's have them there now. They just won the national championship. But now we don't have enough workers to serve them a nice big dinner. So they went to McDonald's and spent a few thousand dollars and then put it all on those tables. And, you know, maybe that's the... Maybe, what are you going to do, right? You don't want to delay it. And you don't want to, not have it. So what are you going to do? You got to have them there now. Well, you got to give them some food. What are you going to give them? Hey, college kids, they like burgers and fries. Let's get them some burgers and fries. What a coincidence. It's the president's favorite food. So I guess that's the thought tree on it. You know, A, Clemson, yes, no, yes. Okay, food, yes, no, yes. Yes, okay, nobody to serve it. What do we do? President and Melania do a cookout? Well, it's wintertime. Not good. You know, what do we do? So and then somebody in the room went, well, you like fast food. Kids like fast food. Fast food's all American. Let's sell them that. Great photo op or not, but that's the way that went. There was somebody on CNN with a sour face yesterday, and they said that when the president said that rather than have the first lady and the second lady throw together some salads, that they would feed these kids a nice dinner, and the woman on CNN said that is so disrespectful. Yeah, I wasn't particularly agitated by that. And, you know, I kind of rolled my eyes when I saw the picture of the chandeliers and the beautiful trappings of the White House and then these piles of fast food. But I think, Steve, this is one of those things that falls into the category of don't worry about it. You know, that's an eye roll, America, but that's indicative of absolutely nothing. Maybe the Bushes would have done this. Maybe the Clintons would have done this. Maybe the Obamas would have done this. Probably not. But I mean, this is indicative of nothing. This is indicative of nothing.
This would be a big deal if you had a normal administration.
Right. Well, they did find some former players and some, you know, NFL types. And they said, this is so disrespectful. And I thought, I'll bet if those were NFL owners, not college players. But right, but if it was a certain class of people that the president knows and appreciates more.
You mean the people who've had to know a fine cut of steak as opposed to the 19-year-olds?
Then they would have figured it out.
I think the point is that he played the visit of the football champions for politics.
And then,
that's the point of it.
And I was really sorry because the first reports I saw, it was just, you know, kind of silly in the food and the it was the usual stuff. Hey, you guys are great. Thank you, Mr. President. We teach values to these young men. It was that whole thing. But then a subsequent clip I saw shows the president standing there, and he's in front of this huge display of food, which he paid for. And I want to see that check, by the way. And then he starts talking politics, you know, because the workers are furloughed, and the Republicans are working so hard on this, and the Democrats need to come to the quote-unquote table. And I thought, okay, now you're using... Now it's not about that decision tree I imagined. How do we feed these kids? What do we do for Clemson? But rather, bing, let's take the Clemson team and use them as an illustration for what the Democrats are doing. You want to know why these kids had to eat burgers and fries instead of steaks and potatoes? It's because of the Democrats. And that was a point the president made unambiguously as he stood before the mountain of food. I think that was a mistake. Maybe the only one, though. Your fantasy fast food buffet, please. Elif, you probably don't have one because you're not a fast food eater. But if you could.
Oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute. What am I, chopped liver?
Okay, chopped liver. What's your, like, what would the sandwich be?
It would be a cheeseburger from Wendy's and some fries, a lot of fries.
From
mostly
where?
Just fries. Wendy's.
Oh, so you're, you, but you can go to other, you can have any franchise, any item. Like, mine's a Whopper from Burger King, but an Arby curly fry.
Okay, then they would be from Culver's. Actually, Culver's. Culver's is even better.
Okay.
Because it's so greasy.
So is this the butter burger from Culver's? And then are you having the Culver fries?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Anything else from Culver's? Or you want to get a beverage?
Custard,
or dessert?
Of course.
Custard. You want the custard. So you're going to go all Culver's. That's your fantasy thing.
Yes.
You don't need a Frosty from...
Well, you just let her choose?
But I don't think she's appreciating the bit.
I mean, she's choosing, and then you're like, well, really, is that your choice?
Well, I can't imagine that anybody would have everything from one place. I mean, people like the shakes at McDonald's, but they've...
Shake Shack.
Okay. Well, now the...
Hot dogs.
It just happened. You'll...
Hot dogs and ice cream, milkshakes.
Okay, clearly you haven't thought this through. I need you to figure out what your entree is,
okay,
what your potato is, what your other item is, your salad or more potato, and then your dessert and your beverage.
It can be two hot dogs.
Okay, fine. The attorneys at GWC pride themselves on being a preeminent injury law firm from Chicago. Their office is in Chicago. Their roots and families are here in Chicago. Despite what you see and hear in lots of lawyer ads, that's not necessarily true in a lot of instances. Many of the law firms you see advertising here in Chicagoland aren't from Illinois. Unless you ask the question and get an honest answer, you'll never know the truth. Many of these lawyers you see on TV and the billboards in town don't even try cases. They want you to think that they're ferocious lawyers in the courtroom, but the truth is, many of them just sign up the cases and then they settle for what they can get. If you are looking for a Chicago trial lawyer to aggressively represent you in your personal injury case, call the trial lawyer firm with 100 employees right here in Chicago, GWC. They're ready to take you, they're ready to get you the money you deserve, whether by settlement or by trial. Call GWC. Boy, they got an easy phone number to remember, 312-999-9999, or visit justicestartstoday.com.
Welcome to a federal fast food non-furloughed franchise. How can I help you?
Mr. Trump would like a hamburger to go.
Anything for anyone else, sir?
We have the national champion team, Clemson Tigers.
And what'll it be, Mr. President?
Big Macs, quarter pounders with cheese, everything that I like.
So, how many hamburgers, sir?
1,000 hamburgers.
Okay, so I've got your burgers, sir. Anything else?
Pizzas, 300 hamburgers.
Okay, so that's 1,300 burgers and pizzas? Do you want any fries with that?
Many, many French fries.
Okay, fries. Anything for Mrs. Trump and Mrs. Pence?
Little quick salads.
Salads. That'll be $2,911.44.
Boy, that's really not a lot of money.
Pull up to window number 2 and have exact change ready. And thank you for shopping at a federal fast food non-furloughed franchise.
Bill, you're on WGN Radio. You wanted to say something about this. Hi, Bill. You're on the air.
Yeah, that was a great spot. I like that.
Thank you, sir.
The thing I wanted to mention was, you know, he keeps talking about the Democrats won't pass the bill for his wall and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Well, he had power with the Senate and the House before the midterm election. Why didn't he get it through back then?
I don't know.
His party didn't even want it.
I don't know. I don't know.
If you stop and think, he had all the power. Everything is with him on his side. He had the House control. He had the Senate control. And he still was talking about his wall. And he couldn't get the budget passed for him to sign it before the Democrats even went into session, before they even controlled it. So his own party doesn't want that wall. That's his own thing. And I think he's got some big contractors that he's got working for him that's going to put the wall up. He's looking at the McMoney also.
The McMoney? What?
Right, right. He's probably got some contractor that he knows that's real good friends.
Yeah.
that they're going to do it, and they're going to kick back to him for getting the job.
Nah. Well, I entertain all conspiracy theories here. How do you think this thing's going to go down, though? Because he's resolute. Nancy Pelosi's resolute. What do you think's going to happen next?
Well, I think what's going to happen, you're going to see a government workers' revolution. I think everybody's going to finally decide and just shut the whole dumb thing down.
Yeah.
And they're really going to be in problem because right now, if you notice, a lot of the airports, they're sending you to other terminals because they don't have enough people. So I already heard one guy last night on another show talk about an air traffic controller that they're being so overworked themselves right now that they can't keep things straight. And if you got the home security guys start going out, well, they're going to have to shut the airlines down. Then the whole country's really going to go. Then you're going to really see more or less a,
I was thinking
I would
the
say
same
a real
thing.
Public, a really public uprising and revolution.
Yeah.
He's either going to have to do it, or they're going to they're going to get him out of there somehow.
I appreciate you listening. Thanks for the phone call, Bill.
Okay.
Have a good day. Yeah, I think that's. My guess has been that the Republicans, the Lindsey Grahams, will persuade the president to take a few weeks, put everybody back to work, and then hold the national emergency card in their back pocket. So, you know, put it back in the Democrats, say, okay, we're putting people back to work. You guys have got to come and help us. And then if not, then he'll declare the national emergency. Then Dick Durbin will take that to the Supreme Court.
Well, the problem is if it plays out that way, the Democrats still have no incentive to play ball, and the clock starts over. Yeah. You know, rather than people being worn down and demanding the Democrats go back as well, if you wait a month or two, we've got fresh legs. You know, we can be closed for another 2 or 3 weeks.
Don't you think our caller was right, though, that the lines at the airport are the sign, right? Because 800,000, you know, I've probably been inconsiderate and off the mark, Steve, when I've been saying that this is very personal for a small number of people, but 800,000 people is 800,000 paychecks. That's probably 3 million people. And the lines at the airport, those aren't all federal workers. Those are people trying to get to Hawaii or South Carolina. They're going to start to get ticked.
Well, don't, you know, if you're going to ask me to take off my belt and my shoes and limit my hair conditioner, which I really need to travel with, but you're not going to take care of the people trying to protect my safety, that makes me angry more than the line.
Well, those people are supposed to be working. The TSA workers are supposed to...
Yeah, but they're calling in sick, I think.
Because they're not getting paid. Right, they're not getting
so
paid.
So this is the front line in domestic terrorism. We're not paying them. I don't care whose fault it is. What the hell?
Well, are you mad at the TSA workers who ultimately will get paid? Shouldn't they show up at the airport? I mean, they're sitting at home.
Mad's the hard word, wrong word. But, you know, if they use up their sick days, I don't want them reimbursed for it. I mean, they made a choice to do that because they will get paid. They will be repaid.
Yeah.
No, I'm mad at the people who can't. An agreement to pay them.
But I think that's actually going to motivate people because they're going to say, wait a minute, it took me an hour and a half to get through Midway? Are you kidding me? Or O'Hare? And I missed my flight? Or whatever. You know, this is ridiculous. And then I think those people will start to call their congresspeople. Because you probably haven't called your congressman or woman and said, hey, XYZ. And by the way, you may tell them to hold the line. Do not buckle. We're with the president 100% on this. National surveys aren't that way, but whatever your opinion is, I think it's going to motivate people to get more involved than just watch it on the news. You know, read about this stuff on the internet, listen to it on the radio. I mean, if you are not a federal employee, how has this affected you? It hasn't affected me at all. I'm going to get paid this week, and you know the CTA is running, so my life is hunky dory. But if we wanted to at spring break, say this thing's still going on in a month, now you've got people's interest. You kidding me? You imagine the lines are terrible in a month anyway. Imagine if we didn't have TSA workers then. People would be ticked. People would be activated. Dave, you're on WGN Radio. What did you want to say? Hi.
Yeah, hi. I don't think it gets enough ink or voice of the fact that the before Christmas, Republicans passed our budget without the wall in the Senate, and now they have gone back on it just because Trump doesn't want to lose his base. As Lindsey Graham said, if you give in, Mr. Trump, it'll be the end of your presidency. And he's implying that's losing his base. And he's not the president of 100% of us. He's the president of about 35.
I appreciate your phone call. Thanks for getting on the phone, Dave. Remember George Bush when he died and we had the funeral for him? We reflected on him, and one of the things that they said that he was seen as was weak sometimes, a little too wimpy, but in part it was because he was willing to listen to the other side. And I think we remembered that fondly when he passed. John Williams, that's Steve Bertrand in the WGN Radio Newsroom. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio. We asked you online on my Facebook page to tell us what your fantasy fast food buffet would be. And a lot of you remembered that we used to do a fantasy brown bag lunch segment when I did an earlier shift, and it was when the market crashed around 2007, 8, 9, right around in there. It was a while, but we would do the show where we would start. Maybe I was on from, I think I was on from 9 to noon. And the last minute of the show would be people calling and texting in, or a few minutes, and they would tell us what their fantasy brown bag lunch would be. That is, the lunch that you remember maybe from your youth or as an adult today that was your favorite, like tuna on white with Oreo cookies, an apple, and a chocolate milk. But you could have whatever you want. You can have a can of Coke in there if you want. What was your fantasy brown bag lunch? We limited you to three baggies and a bevy. And boy, if you just go there for a minute, you have a lot of fond memories, don't you? But about the president's fast food buffet, some of you are saying, John, Wendy's, Frosty, Chocolate. 815 said, bring back the fantasy brown bag lunch, King John. 630, Five Guys Burger, no onions. Fries from McDonald's, onion rings from White Castle. Chocolate shake from Culver's, this is my dream. 708, hamburger from Illinois Bar and Grill, fries from same Oberweis shake. I'll tell you what, I've been saying a Frosty from Wendy's, but if you had a Oberweis shake, not that I consider that fast food, but that's about as good as it gets. John, I want the notion that the White House staff is so depleted with the government shutdown that they had to serve McDonald's is ridiculous. Also, these are athletes who I seriously doubt would consider this spread anything they'd like to eat. It was disrespectful. 815, how about catering a steak dinner? They could set up, tear down, clean up the mess. No real work for the royal family to do.
the royal family?
A lot of you said, are there no catering services in Washington?
Well, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, Steve Bertrand.
Has it been fact-checked that there's not a staff there that could have cooked for them?
I have not read a fact check on that.
Okay.
708 said, your absolute hatred and disrespect for this president is overwhelmingly disgusting. I doubt any one of those young men were disgusted or disapproved of the food the president provided. A couple of you said, you know, I'm not sure the food was warm, because you didn't see the little heating elements under those things. It was a photo op. It was a pile of burgers that came from a McDonald's. So by the time the young men got to eat that quote-unquote hot food, and frankly, is there anything more disappointing in life than cold fries from a fast food place? Some of your texts to WGN. Oh, and then one last quick phone call here before we go to Stacy. That's on line one. I think we already talked to line one. Elif, where are we going next? Line two. And that's Joe. Joe, you're on WGN. What was the question you had, Joe?
Oh, hey, John.
Hey.
A couple years ago, you did a bit on cable pricing, and you said the name of a department that you could call your cable provider for and try to get your rates cut down.
Ah, that's a completely different topic, but I don't mind because I don't remember, and maybe somebody does. So we had a guest
that's
on a couple of years ago.
But by the way, I like a Steak and Shake cheeseburger.
Oh, Steak and Shake is really good.
Yeah, the best.
I love even watching them make those things. Fond memories of Steak and Shake.
Yeah.
Oh.
No fries. I don't eat fries, and I drink water. So
and
that's the end
I'm
of it for me.
Back. Okay, so there's a number, a department you call at Comcast, and they will reduce your cable bill?
Yeah, that's what you said on the air. But about 2 years ago, you did a. Boy. You know, you could call and ask, and yeah. They do it.
Okay, 312-981-7200. If anybody knows, call Joe. Help him. Help me. Help America. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you, John.
Keep listening. Stacy St. Clair is a reporter for the Chicago Tribune. She joins us in studio. Hi, Stacy.
Hi, John.
Nice to see you again.
Nice to see you.
All of this silliness notwithstanding, do you want to participate?
My favorite fast food.
For instance?
I would say a Portillo's beef and cheddar on the croissant.
Wow.
It's my favorite. You know, just go local.
I didn't even think of that. Their burgers are great.
Yeah.
They're...
And I do the Arby's fries.
Thank you. The curly fries, though. I knew I liked something about you.
Just that.
You have been reporting. I saw your name on the byline, I think, on the digital platform, but maybe not in the print.
Both.
Both?
Yeah.
For the Jason Van Dyke trial and the sentencing, which is awaiting. I thought it was very interesting to hear what the options were, because it's all over the gamut here. So Jason Van Dyke has been found guilty of how many charges?
He's been found guilty of one count of second-degree murder and 16 counts of aggravated battery with a firearm.
In the shooting of Laquan McDonald. So we've been waiting. You know, there were two pivot points here. One is, will he be found guilty? The answer is yes. And then the maybe just as important question is, does he go to jail? How long? What are the sentencing guidelines on this?
So it depends who you talk to. People, one of the most interesting things about this verdict from a legal standpoint has been there are not, there's not universal agreement on what the sentencing guidelines is, because the way the indictment came down, technically, Jason Van Dyke should face a minimum of 6 years for every one of those aggravated battery counts.
So 6 times 16 is 96.
Yes. Right? Yes.
Yeah, 96 years.
So he's looking... technically, most people thought, you know, minimum of 96 years, and that's a lot for a second degree, you know, murder charge. And
what does the prosecution want?
Well, so, you know, you had Joe McMahon on the day after, right? And I think he kind of showed a little bit of his cards there when he was on your show, and I had talked to him around that same time, and he told me the same thing. He doesn't want to send Jason Van Dyke away for the rest of his life. In fact, I think he said on your show, you know, it's tough to be a police officer in prison. It's tough for anyone to be in prison, but it's really tough for a police officer to be in prison because you're isolated. You never mingle with the general population. So Joe McMahon clearly has no interest in sending or no desire to send Jason Van Dyke away for the rest of his life. And he didn't give a specific number in the memo he filed this week, but he did provide the judge with a way that the judge could sentence him to 18 years.
18 years?
Yeah.
How old is Jason Van Dyke?
He's 40.
Yeah.
So
okay.
That would get him out in about, you have to serve 85% of your sentence for aggravated battery. That would get him out at about 55.
Think about that. Blago went to jail for 14.
Correct.
And this is 18 or less. I don't know if that's instructive or not. I'm just thinking of people who went to jail and for how long and what's the appropriate penalty for that. So maybe 18 years. Mm-hmm. But in fact, he could be released. He could be released on probation, right?
He could get probation. He will not get probation. I don't think that's going to happen in any universe, but you know, his defense team has to ask for it.
And they did.
And they did.
I wonder if that's a smart move, right? Because I know you want to bargain low, but that's so unreasonable. It's not even like you offered the other side something. It's like when you're buying a house and they want $400,000 and you say, how about $1,000? Well, you really haven't made an offer.
Right.
You know, we're back to $400,000 in the case of real estate.
Right. But I don't think the judge will be taken aback by that.
Really?
It's a very standard move for a defense. If it's a probational offense, the defense is going to ask for probation.
Stacey, I'm sorry, it's Bertrand. Yeah. I'm going to interrupt. John, I'm going to interrupt you. We're getting a word of a key vote out of England on Brexit. It's not good for Theresa May.
This is a special report from ABC News. I'm Aaron Katursky. Members of the British Parliament have rejected Prime Minister Theresa May's Brexit deal by an overwhelming majority. It means that she now has until January 21st to set out a plan B, which may involve going back to Brussels to seek further concessions from the European Union. May had made a last-ditch plea to members of Parliament to back her withdrawal plan from the European Union, saying that we have a duty to deliver on the democratic decision of the British people. But members of Parliament, to repeat, have rejected her Brexit deal by 432 votes to 202. I'm Aaron Katursky. This has been a special report from ABC News.
So we'll continue to follow that, have more coming up at 2. In fact, a word from Theresa May, but a big defeat for her and an increasing sign that perhaps England might leave the EU without a Brexit deal.
Thank you, Steve Bertrand. It's 1:45. More on that in 15 minutes. We're talking to Stacey St. Clair, who's a reporter for the Chicago Tribune, about Jason Van Dyke found guilty of 16 plus one different counts. The question is, how long does he go to jail for the shooting of Laquan McDonald? And I mentioned that I thought it was a silly suggestion by his defense team to say, how about nothing? You said that's not atypical and not right. Insulting to the procedure, so that's okay.
Right. The judge will take no offense to that.
So do we have any sense of what the judge is going to do?
I think the judge will do, he's not an unreasonable, or a hardliner, but he also doesn't worry too much about public opinion. He kind of does what he wants to do. I think you could see something in the range that McMahon.
18 years.
It's funny, maybe a little less.
Well, and it's funny because you say, well, what's typical in this case? But we really don't have many convictions of police officers shooting civilians, not for second-degree murder and 16 different counts. This is atypical.
Correct. And I think the judge will take into consideration what the jury's verdict was, and that was that they believe that Jason Van Dyke was in fear for his safety when he pulled the gun. But
who believes that?
The jury. But they don't believe that it was a reasonable fear. That's what that second degree finding is. So that's what the judge has in front of him, that verdict.
That's not your interpretation? I mean, that is the correct interpretation?
That is the correct interpretation.
That the jury believed that Van Dyke feared for his life.
That's right. That's what they found. That to get to second degree, that was the decision they had to have decided.
As opposed to first degree.
Correct. The mitigating circumstance. They believe it wasn't reasonable to shoot, but the mitigating circumstance was that he wrongly believed that he was in jeopardy. And that's what knocked it down from a first degree to a second degree. Mm. That's the road they had to take.
Well, if you wipe the slate clean, pardon me, maybe this isn't even relevant now, right? But if you wipe the slate clean and said, watch the video, should this officer fear for his safety? I don't think so.
Correct.
That's just me.
Right. I mean, that's what the jury did, right? They said he shouldn't fear for him. He shouldn't have been afraid, but he was. So,
well, I'm sorry.
It was unreasonable.
I'm having trouble following that. He was or he wasn't. He was fearful for his life, but he should not have been.
Right. It was an unreasonable fear is what they found.
Pardon me, then we're on the same page.
Yeah.
Because you figure all of those guns pointing at Laquan McDonald, if I'm one of the police officers, I like my chances. I don't know if this is instructive either, but if the bullet had found somebody else, a civilian, or if a young man had shot a police officer, mm-hmm. I wonder how reasonable 18 years or probation or 96 years would be. Mm-hmm. I know that we treat police officers different in these circumstances. I think we should.
Right.
But I wonder if Van Dyke does not go to jail for double digits, say, mm-hmm. if people will say that disrespects Jason, Laquan McDonald's life.
Well, I did get some emails today because actually there was a sentencing yesterday in the Hedea Pendleton murder, right? In 84 years. And so some readers actually raised that question, why are prosecutors asking for 18 years when this, man got 84 years for killing someone as well? There are some differences. One was Hedea Pendleton's killers were convicted of first degree murder. Jason Van Dyke is not. He's convicted of what we more commonly consider manslaughter. So he doesn't have a criminal record. He has a record of public service for 14 years and for contributing to his community.
Who never drew his gun?
Never fired his gun.
It's so I'm tortured by this because. Well, I'm angry about all mm-hmm. of this. What is the purpose of sending him to jail for the rest of his life? What is the purpose of sending him to jail for 96 years? What is the purpose of sending him for 50 years? I don't wish that on him, and I don't know that that makes Chicago or the world a better place if he goes to jail for more than, say, 18 years.
I think that is exactly the argument that Special Prosecutor Joe McMahon laid out in his document yesterday, and I think it's the argument that you and he discussed this very topic. I think it was the day after the verdict.
You heard that conversation?
Yeah, I've listened to the conversation,
and I could tell that he was that he had strong opinions that he wasn't at liberty yet to say.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in the background of my mind too has been, I wonder what the public reaction will be if the penalty is insufficient. Mm-hmm. Will you get something akin to what you might have seen if he were found not guilty? I wonder where that line is. What's the number there? Because I'll bet in some community organizers, they're waiting to see what happens here.
Right. And I think if you look at it, prosecutors charged Jason Van Dyke for every shot that he fired at Laquan McDonald. And under the law, it's this sort of situation where each one of those shots, the prison time for those shots has to be served consecutively, where most of the time we're used to sentences being served concurrently. So that's just sort of like the little quirk in this situation. If he was charged with one count of aggravated battery for shooting Laquan and convicted of second degree murder, you'd be looking at a sentencing range between a minimum of 6 years and a maximum of 30 years.
And then you could have, right. And that makes more sense to me. I don't understand concurrent versus consecutive. I understand what they mean, but why do they do that? Why is each shot a separate act when it's within 14 seconds of each other?
I mean, that is the way the law is structured to handle
it. If you came back a week later and shot me or punched me, I get that.
Correct.
But if it really was one act.
Right. And that's what the defense is arguing. The defense is saying this is one act, one crime. But the way that the indictment was established and the way the law is, it's one act and almost 16 crimes in the one act.
But then, you know what, as a judge who has the leeway here,
right.
I think I think I could still treat it as one. I could say 16 for all 16.
Right. And I think what the prosecutors sort of suggested to the judge.
16 for, how many total shots was it? It was
16 shots.
Yeah.
So what the prosecutor suggested to the judge is, you determine, Your Honor, which of the shots caused serious bodily injury. You know, there's a lot of time spent during the trial on what were the fatal shots. There was two that, you know, the defense kept harping on, one to the neck, one to the chest. And the prosecution said, okay, let's take the defense's own argument. They say there were two fatal shots. Have those serve consecutively. Give him 6 years, you know, each of those, that's 12. And you give him six for the rest of the shots. And then you're at 18. So that's how the prosecution came up with 18.
For the aggravated side.
And for the aggravated. And then the sentence for
second degree
would just run concurrently. It would run at the same time. So while he was serving aggravated battery, he would serve second degree.
We'll pause for just a minute. Do you have one more minute for us? Stacey St. Clair writes for the Chicago Tribune. She's in our studio. We're talking about the sentencing, which will we get the result this week, right?
We should, yes.
Just another, it's 1:56. We have just a few seconds left. One of our listeners said, was temporary insanity an option for Jason Van Dyke at all?
I mean, not really. Temporary insanity is what's considered an affirmative defense. And Jason Van Dyke did have an affirmative defense, a justification for his actions. And he said that he felt that what he was doing at that moment was the right thing. And that's what temporary insanity is, that you can't tell right from wrong. So even though Jason Van Dyke didn't say I was insane, he said, when I committed the act, I believed I was doing the right thing. And I still believe I was doing the right thing.
Yeah.
So he did defend himself on a mental standpoint from that angle, but not technically an insanity defense.
Okay, the sentencing this week. I'm going to call you and ask you to join us on the phone or in the studio again.
Sure, happy to do it.
Nice to see you.
Nice to
by
see
the way,
you too.
So I'm done talking to you.
Yeah.
I'm now going to take a call.
Okay.
On a different topic.
Mm-hmm.
This will take about 14 seconds. Hey, stay right there, though. Jody, you're on WGN Radio. How are you, Jody?
Good. How are you?
Good. One of our listeners said, how do I get the cable company to reduce my rate? What did we say a couple years ago about that?
It's called the retention division.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And they lower your rates so that you don't move to another provider.
It's like with your credit card company. You say, hey, I'm done. I'm leaving. And then they'll say, no. We've got a special deal for you.
Exactly.
Okay, so I'm going to call my cable provider and ask for the retention division. That's what we needed. Jody, thank you for the call. Into the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom with the stories that matter next on WGN.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
This is John.
Here's John Williams.
I knew he was going to say that. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio. And we're here weekdays 1 to 3, Saturdays 10 to noon.
Lord have mercy.
Don't miss the Mincing Rascals podcast. It was judged the best in the city of Chicago. It features Steve Bertrand and me and Eric Zorn and Scott Stannis and Patty Vasquez from WGN Radio.
Welcome
and Justin
to a federal
Kaufman.
Fast food non-furloughed franchise. How can I help you?
Mr. Trump would like a hamburger to go.
Anything for anyone else, sir?
We have the national champion team, Clemson Tigers.
And what'll it be, Mr. President?
Big Macs, quarter pounders with cheese, everything that I like.
So, how many hamburgers, sir?
1,000 hamburgers.
Okay, so I've got your burgers, sir. Anything else?
Pizzas, 300 hamburgers.
Okay, so that's 1,300 burgers and pizzas? Do you want any fries with that?
Many, many French fries.
Okay, fries. Anything for Mrs. Trump and Mrs. Pence?
Little quick salads.
Salads. That'll be $2,911.44.
Boy, that's really not a lot of money.
Pull up to window number 2 and have exact change ready. And thank you for shopping at a federal fast food non-furloughed franchise.
I wanted to talk a little bit about the federal employees who are working and not working and getting paid and not getting paid. But the president's spread made us think about our fantasy fast food buffet. What would it be for you? 815 said, John, my favorite is a chopped salad from Portillo's and a chocolate shake from Steak and Shake. A lot of you are mentioning Portillo's if you think about it. John, Portillo cheeseburger, no lettuce, cheese fries, Culver's cheese curds, Arby's Jamocha shake, and a cherry turnover. Okay, I'm hungry now. Signed, Carol. 847 said, John, I'm a Democrat. Big deal about all of this food. He paid for it himself. If they don't want to eat it, they don't have to. That's true. 630 said, a sloppy, juicy Whopper sandwich. Fries from Checkers / Rallies. Wow. Steak and Shake shake. Coke and chicken tenders from McDonald's. If you could have anything on that spread, what would it be? John, recently I flew to San Diego and made sure to say thank you to any TSA agent we saw. They really appreciated it. One told us the reason the border people want the wall is that they'll get tons of overtime pay. John, I canceled my trip to Florida, worried about the plane's maintenance safety and TSA security lapses. That was a point that more than a few people have made. It's ironic that if all of this is because we want to make our country safer, what we've actually done is taken the front lines of that, the TSA, and we've stressed them out. Now, they're supposed to show up for work and not get paid, but a lot of them, seeing that, said, yeah, not so much. So the lines are longer. There are fewer workers. Maybe they're having to work more. I haven't heard anybody say that the planes are therefore not safe, and I'm not reporting that. I have not heard that at all. But somebody said, I don't want to fly under these conditions. And I think that's going to be one of the tipping points, is if lines at airports get so long, if people get so angry, if you start to get viral videos like the one I saw yesterday where somebody walks the line at an airport to get through the security check and it snakes on to like infinity and then they fast forward it and you just can't believe how long that is. It makes you not want to travel, or it makes you angry when you do.
Yeah, I mean, they brought in extra TSA workers a few years ago at O'Hare because there were really long lines. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, but that was bringing in more TSA workers. I don't think that slow lines at airports are going to motivate most of Americans, because the percentage of Americans who are flying in any given week, you know, it's pretty small.
Mm. I don't know, Steve. It seems to me like that's a lot of people go in and out of O'Hare every day and Midway. I think that gets a lot of attention. I think that'd sure pop on the media and social media.
Yeah, but you wouldn't feel it. I mean, I don't know.
You would if you were at the airport.
Yeah, if you were at the airport.
Don't you don't know anybody that's not going to or hasn't traveled recently?
Yeah.
I forget about you, because I know you're very close to travelers, but I mean.
Well, I just traveled. I just got back from San Diego myself last week.
Okay, and that didn't have anything to do with Steve Bertrand travel. That was just you doing what you do.
Right.
Well, imagine if you had to wait 45 extra minutes in that line. Or an hour.
I know, it would tick me off. What I'm saying is it might not tick off everyone else on my block, because it's not impacting that many people. The percentage of travelers ticked off, really super high. The percentage of Americans ticked off, much, much lower.
Yeah, okay, but I
mean, I don't know what it is that would have to happen for, I mean, God forbid, some sort of tragedy that would be motivating, but
right.
Yeah. I don't know what else would move, I don't know, you know.
Well, that's it. I mean, I'm looking for an end game here, and besides a government, a national emergency, right?
Maturity pills? Maybe we pass around a few maturity pills?
Listen, this show is the one that said what we need is a kindergarten teacher. She or he will come in and say, get in here! And then Donald Trump would come in with his head down, and there'd be Nancy and Chuck, and they'd be like, ooh, they're all looking at the tops of their shoes.
See, and I disagree with you there, too. I think what we really need are maybe three kindergartners.
to run the joint?
And present the problem to them and say, now, how would you solve this fairly?
Right. Well, I think...
Give them jacks and balls and have them divide them up that way?
Either way, I think it would be, you got to share. You're not going to get $5 billion. You're going to give more than $1.2.
Not jacks. They're not safe anymore.
Can't bring those on airplanes. It's 2:14. I reached out to a lawyer who knows a little bit about federal law and federal employees, and that's Ruth Major, who's been on this show before. She's a labor lawyer in Chicago and works on federal worker rights. Ruth, you're on WGN Radio again. Thanks for joining us. How are you?
Real good. How you doing, John?
Good. Having heard all of that silliness, what do you want to say? You want to jump into that conversation, Ruth?
The only thing that came to my mind, though, was just that they are, I believe, when they make the decisions as to who will be working, they do take into consideration, jobs that protect property and people. I think that's the standard, how it's described. So it's unlikely that something would happen where somebody would get hurt or something like that would happen based on the fact that the what they call non-essential workers aren't showing up. That's my understanding.
But if I'm, all right, so you have essential, can you break this down? We have essential and non-essential workers, is that what it is?
Right. So there's a couple things, I guess, in understanding who's working, who's not working. Some federal employees don't actually receive their income through the budget funds. They get it through other sources, such as the U.S. Post Office. So the U.S. Post Office isn't affected by the situation with the budget. The employees that do get their salaries through the budget, they are basically divided into two categories, what has been called in the past essential or non-essential, sometimes called accepted or more recently accepted and non-accepted. The positions that are considered essential, those determinations are made primarily by the agencies, the federal agencies themselves, and they get some, there's some involvement as well in making the decisions with, with other parts, members of the executive office, the president's administration. So the agencies make decisions as to who within each agency are considered essential, and the criteria that's usually used is people who are essential to protect life and property. That's sort of at a very high level how those decisions are made. So right now, the people who are considered essential are being required to come to work, and they're not getting paid. The non-essential employees aren't coming to work and aren't getting paid as well.
So nobody's getting paid, but some of them are having to go to work. But IRS employees, Department of Education, Department of Agriculture, probably most of those people aren't working and aren't getting paid, right?
Right. I think I read something that there's a very small percentage. I want to say something like 6% of the IRS staff is considered essential and they're working and the rest aren't. Yeah. And there was a decision this morning. There was a federal lawsuit recently filed by the essential workers from several different unions, including the National Air Traffic Controllers Association, and I guess the National Treasury Employees Union, and a judge today. They were asking a judge to order the federal government to pay the employees who were working, And a judge today denied their request for a temporary restraining order to direct the government to pay them. So that's, I think, a recent development in all of this.
Well, it's interesting to me because I think, you know, everybody focuses on the TSA workers because they're on TV and we do bump into them. So you say, okay, there's the front line. And those people are having to work and they're not getting paid. But say you're a federal worker who isn't working and isn't getting paid. I would imagine the TSA worker will eventually get paid because, in fact, they worked. What about the people in the federal payroll who aren't working? Are they are they due money because they didn't work? I wonder what happens to them.
Well, so historically, when things get straightened out and the conflict is resolved and the budget's in place, historically those people have been paid, but obviously, right now, depending on how long this goes, this is going to be an unprecedented length, and there's no guarantees Congress would determine whether or not those people would get paid or not.
Well, through no fault of their own, but I mean, they didn't work. If I don't work, I don't get paid. If I get laid off or furloughed or in the private sector, you don't get paid because you didn't work. Would they be eligible for unemployment compensation?
Yeah, so they could apply for unemployment, in their state where they work. In most states, there's a little bit of a lag from the time you stop working to the time you start collecting payments. But under most states' law or all states' law, you would be able to collect unemployment because you're not working and you're not getting paid. If you do get paid down the road, most of those states would require you to pay back any of the unemployment compensation that you received.
Oh, that's a lot of fun. So, but unemployment compensation isn't 100%. Do you have a guesstimate as to what the percentage is of the pay?
It all will depend on what you make. Most states, I believe, obviously I don't practice in 50 states, but for example, in Illinois, there's caps. So at a certain point, it caps out, and obviously the more you make, the smaller the percentage of your income is. But it's a pretty modest payment for most people. I don't know the exact percentage, but it's fairly low, and it's certainly not going to represent your entire income. But it will help you maybe pay the mortgage and pay the obviously some of your more essential bills.
The president intimated that he thought that the note holders, the mortgage holders, would understand if some of the federal employees couldn't make their car and house payments on time. There was a bill in Congress to actually grant them leeway, right? Do you know anything about that?
That I'm actually not familiar with. I'm not familiar with that.
Fair enough. Now, my understanding is that the House likes it. I'm not sure if the Senate does. I don't know if the president has expressed an opinion about that. So would we all agree on who the essential employees are and are not? I mean, is there any TSA would obviously fall on that list. Do you have a list or do you have any idea how? I know you said that those agencies themselves make those decisions, but I guess it would be people who are pretty obviously protecting us and our stuff, right?
Right. Well, so each agency makes the decision with guidance from the White House Office of Management and Budget. And in 1980, there was an opinion that was prepared by who was then the Attorney General for President Carter, under President Carter. And in that opinion, they defined what essential means. And basically what it means is positions that are necessary to protect life and property. So those are the guidelines that the agencies are supposed to use in determining who's essential, who's not essential. So obviously TSA, they're protecting life in the sense that they're obviously checking to make sure that people aren't boarding planes with you know, bombs or weapons or that type of thing. So obviously they would be essential. Other positions aren't. Like, I do a lot of work with the U.S. EEOC, the United States, you know, Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, where people file charges of discrimination and that type of thing. They're pretty much shut down. I mean, they're, even their portal is shut down. You can't even access their portal right now. So unless they're, you have a position where you're protecting life and property, generally you're going to be, I think, categorized as being in the non-essential group, and you would not be working and not be getting paid either.
619, this texter said, John, contract employees will not get back pay. That's interesting. I guess those are private sector employees, contract employees who will not get back pay because they're not working, I presume. So I guess they don't have any federal protection, and too bad for them. John, I just came in from St. Louis last night. About three customers and about 25 TSA agents. So in that case, it sounds like it's adequately staffed. This person says these government employees can collect unemployment and pay it back when they finally get retroactive pay. Well, that was the point you made a moment ago. And I guess that's nice to know, but I also think that's a real bite in the butt. And it's and that doesn't solve your problem right now, that you need money in your checking account right now. What are you going to do?
Right. I mean, obviously, it's unemployment's going to cover a small percentage of most people's, you know, most of the bills that people have. So it puts, obviously, a lot of people in a tough position where they have to rely only on their unemployment benefits.
630.
It took a while to get the first one.
Yeah, 630, right. Yeah, 630 says, for those workers that are working, isn't the correct wording that their paychecks will be delayed, not that they won't get paid? I think that's probably correct, right? They're not getting paid right now, but they will. So you could say their paychecks are delayed. That's accurate, isn't it, Ruth?
Yes, that's correct, because they will for sure get paid at some point because they're working. But unlike the non-essential workers who aren't working and don't have the same claim to get paid.
One last thing. In a previous shutdown, didn't the employees get paid, or at least some of them, double their pay?
Right. So in, I believe it was 2013, the AFGE, which is the American Federation of Government Employees, and they represent the largest percentage of government workers, federal government workers, they didn't file the lawsuit. I believe the individuals filed it, but they supported it and sort of assisted with it. A lawsuit was filed in the Federal Court of Claims under the Fair Labor Standards Act, which requires that people get paid at least a minimum wage for performing work, and it covers federal employees as well. Under the FLSA, that statute, if it's a willful violation, you can recover twice of the pay that you were denied. And the essential workers in 2013 in that federal lawsuit did recover twice the wages that they were denied during the time they were working.
That's interesting. I wonder how they feel about that. I mean, again, it's tough when you don't get paid, but if I told you hang on because we'll get you double down the road, that's not a terrible solution, at least. But I guess if anybody cares from a federal standpoint, boy, we're really cutting off our nose despite our face here, right? We delay services.
Exactly.
And we double the pay when we finally get it. That's a lose-lose from a taxpayer standpoint.
Exactly, which is, you know, should be more incentive, obviously, for this to get worked out, because it's going to be a big bill if people join in and, you know, in these lawsuits and get double the pay right now. That's huge.
I don't know the answer to this. I don't know that you do either. Jim, you're on WGN. What can we do for you, Jim?
Yes, sir. I'd like to know, since the government shut down, does the president, the Senate, and the House still get paid?
The president tweeted today that Nancy Pelosi is getting paid. So I presume members of Congress are. I don't know. Are you up on that, Ruth? Do you know who's getting paid in the Congress?
I don't, but there always seem to be exceptions for members of Congress. So they probably are getting paid.
Well, I think that's a little ridiculous.
Yeah. Some of them have volunteered to turn in their pay, but not all of them have. I'm going to double check on that. Ella, LF, find out who's getting paid and who isn't getting paid in the Congress, House and Senate, maybe their staffs as well. Yeah, good question. Thanks for the phone call, Bill. We'll get you an answer on the radio, okay?
Thank you very much, sir.
Yep, thanks for listening. I'm pretty sure they are, and if they choose not to take it, then that's their option. But I'm pretty sure that they are getting paid. All right, I'm out of time. Ruth, it's good to talk to you again. Ruth Major is...
Nice to talk to you, too.
...an attorney in town, a labor lawyer in Chicago on federal worker rights, and we appreciate you joining us. Let's talk again maybe as more questions come up, okay?
Sounds great. Thanks a lot.
Sounds great from a conversation standpoint. Not great for the federal workers. But he lost his committee positions, right?
He lost all his committee seats, right? So he's basically a congressman without portfolio. Won't be voting on legislation in committee. Certainly wouldn't be chairing any subcommittees or anything like that.
He'll be like a freshman congressman.
Even freshman congressmen.
They get committee assignments.
Yeah, they sit on a committee. Yeah. He's not even sitting on a committee.
Do any congressmen...
I think he's probably the only one.
Not have any committee assignments. I mean, it doesn't mean that you're without a vote, so he still represents the people in his district.
You can vote when something gets to the floor, but you don't have any influence on anything in committee.
How long does that censure? Was that? I'm sorry, Steve.
It was a rebuke.
How long does the rebuke last? Like, will he eventually get...
The rebuke is just like a mark in your file, your permanent record. Stripping of the committees, though, that seems to have been done... They didn't say for any period of time.
Yeah,
so.
Right, because after that, then you really don't have a voice for your people you're waiting for a vote.
He was just elected in November, and he hasn't changed that much.
Just re-elected in November.
Just re-elected in November, and the party apparatus was behind him then. But there's already a primary challenger announced for him, and I would imagine the...
Primary challenger, yeah.
2 years from now. Running.
Yeah.
And so I would imagine the Republican leadership hopes that he loses in that primary, but they supported him in November 6 weeks ago.
It's funny, you say those provocative things and you seem to get away with it and you're actually energized by a little of it,
I think he's also a victim of the fact that the president says similar things or implies similar things, and they're impotent when it comes to standing up to him or criticizing him. They won't really do it. So when someone else that they can beat up on does, they really pile on.
Yeah, attention world, if you want to go ahead and do that, just look around and make sure you're the president or in a position sufficiently strong that you can survive that. It's funny, though. I mean, literally, talk show hosts, TV weathermen. I'm just thinking of people, throw the TV weathermen out, but I'm thinking of people off the top of my head who have said provocative things or wrong things and are being punished these days. And then some people get away with it. And it's a very, to me, fluid sort of thing. And so beware. Be careful. Don't say that stuff.
Well, why did you throw TV weatherman out? Because he lost his job, didn't he? Or she?
Yeah, he did, but I don't think that it reflected his views. Congressman King has pretty much been speaking his mind. That guy, it was a verbal gaffe. There was no evidence that he was a racist.
He misspoke.
He just said a word.
Right.
And he lost his job. I forget what the latest on that was, because I know that he and his wife posted a contrite video. Not saying that we're sorry for being misinterpreted, but literally we're sorry that our husband his mouth didn't work that day. And it seemed to me like there was some sort of backlash to the backlash. That is, there were some people who supported him and said, yeah, this guy shouldn't have been fired for that. But I'm pretty sure the weatherman still does not have his job. It's 2:44. Okay, more in a minute on WGN. A lot of toner here at WGN, printing out all of your fantasy fast food buffets. If you were serving for the Clemson Tigers, what would you put out? I mean, the president likes fast food. No harm in that. Two presidents ago did as well. I don't know how many presidents ago was Bill Clinton. Anyway, but the president said, because of the furloughed workers, we don't have enough people to serve a nice dinner for the guys. We didn't want them to wait, so we got them some fast food. And then he made a little political hay with that, and the guys all stood in line and ate a whole bunch of Big Macs and pizzas and fries and stuff like that. But if I was going to put out, like, my favorite fast food, it would be Burger King Whoppers. It would be Arby's Curly Fries. I would do McDonald's French Fries, too, because it just seems to be un-American to not. I don't know if I go to Portillo's, because I don't think Portillo's is fast food. It's fast casual food. Kevin, you're kind of the food expert around here. Do you have any thoughts about this?
Well, I was sort of thinking it is a breakfast, lunch, and dinner type thing, because I've got a long range of fast food. You know, I used to be a fast food junkie, John, and it turns out it's not exactly healthy for you to eat it every day, apparently, allegedly.
Been some reporting on that.
So I haven't really had much fast food over the past 2 or 3 years. But back in my heyday,
right,
McDonald's breakfast, the GOAT. Greatest of all time. Sausage, egg, and cheese McMuffin, dynamite with a hash brown, mix in an orange juice.
By the way, their pancakes and sausage,
yes,
off the charts.
So good.
Oh, my God. I don't know what that is. I'm not sure if it's food. It's delicious.
I know.
Oh, it's, man.
Now, no fast food buffet is complete without the cheese gordita crunch from Taco Bell. Legendary, Hall of Fame type fast food item right there.
Oh, cheesy gordita crunches.
You got to go cheesy gordita crunch. Mm. Maybe mix in a quesadilla. And then I think just that the Big Mac is just so iconic that you got to have the Big Mac involved here.
I think so. I mean, if I were the president, even if it wasn't my favorite food, even if the guy said, that is our hamburger.
Right. That's America's sort of iconic burger.
Put a flag on that.
Right. And then apple pie right after that or something. From McDonald's. You get the apple pies from McDonald's.
Yeah. Caution, hot filling. Oh, man, that filling was hot.
I missed this folk. Were you guys pro or anti this move from Trump here, serving the fast food to the...
I was anti him then saying, you know, the Republicans are getting the job done, but we have to serve this crap food to the guys because of the Democrats.
It's kind of hilarious, though.
We get it.
Plus, if you're like a world-class D1 athlete, I mean, these guys are on a crazy strict diet. And I know some of them, there was some social media reactions like, wow, I thought he was kidding about the whole fast food thing. But then you also saw like linemen packing their suit coats with cheeseburgers. And they had 3 Big Macs on one plate.
Were they really?
I mean, that's a college student's dream right there, is a fast food buffet, right?
I wonder what their stomachs are like today.
Not great. I'm sure the trip home probably wasn't the best.
My problem was, I don't think that food was hot.
No.
Yeah, that's a good point. I was thinking about that, too.
A cold
fast
puck.
Food does not, once it's like gone to even like room temperature, it's mostly gone.
And then you heat it back up again, and you can't bring that patient back to life.
No.
It's gone.
You can't.
And so I thought,
how do we know, though, for sure?
You can, but only sliders. They'll warm up back to what they were.
But how do we know that they were cold or not warm?
Well, because there weren't those chafing dishes with the little heating elements underneath.
That's true.
So they were probably warm when somebody pulled up in an SUV and they threw them all in the back and then they drove them over. Then they got to go through security. Then they got to pile them up. Then the president talked for a while.
That's true.
And those burgers are just sitting there going, eat me, eat me.
But nothing this guy can do isn't controversial, right? Like, he just got a bunch of fast food for college kids, and it's become this giant debate.
Shame on
war.
Us.
I mean, it's like, but it's some of it's self-imposed from Trump.
Do you remember when he tossed the coin for the national championship football game? Was it the national championship?
Yeah, that was last year, right, in Atlanta.
What was the game? The one where he flipped it wrong. He didn't even flip it right.
It's kind of third.
And people, I know, he kind of tossed it in the air
like a
pancake.
Right.
And then people beat him up for that. And I'm like, we're showing our colors, America, if we're going to be mad at Donald Trump for feeding the Clemson Tigers.
I mean, that's hilarious. They're college kids. You know, these guys eat fine dining every day anyways. You know how much millions of dollars a Clemson-type football program puts in their nutritional
system?
Well,
that's what I'm thinking.
I mean,
they're
these
like...
guys are eating whatever they want. The healthiest, best stuff you could possibly think. And then the president goes, here, fast food it away. Stuff your face, boys. I don't know. If I was a college kid...
You're not
obviously, I'm not a D1. I mean, if I walked in that when I was in college, I would have been like, mother of God. Is this heaven?
Yeah. If you'd told us about this, I would have really tried for the national championship. Forget the trophy in 15-0.
Yeah.
If you said we're going to have a pile of fast food fantasy, I'm in. I'm in. I'm putting in 2 days, 3 days, whatever it takes.
Whatever it takes, coach.
Let's go.
Let's go after it.
It's 252. So that's on my Facebook page. You can comment there. I'm WGN King John on Facebook. Stacey St. Clair was on a little while ago. We were talking about the sentencing of Jason Van Dyke, but she said, you know, people were talking to her also about the person that killed Hedia Pendleton. What about that guy? One guy gets 80-plus years. The other guy might get 18 years. There's a discrepancy here. Stacey's going to be on with Andrea Darlis tonight to just talk about reporting in Chicago in a minute. But you sure know the Hedia Pendleton case. I'm reading from the Chicago Tribune. Hedia was 15 and performed at President Barack Obama's second inauguration 1 week before she was shot in Chicago after mistaking the group that she was with for members of a rival gang. Mr. Obama mentioned her during his State of the Union address weeks later and hosted her parents at that event. First Lady Michelle Obama attended the funeral. A couple of years later, she went back and spoke to a commencement address at that school. And Mrs. Obama said this. She said, "I know you can all live your life with the same determination and joy that Hedia lived her life. I know you can all dig deep and keep on fighting to fulfill your own dreams." The Obamas really became close to this family and to that story, and so people were wondering about the sentencing, and there are 84 years. Cleopatra Cowley's on a phone line. Cleopatra, it's John Williams, and you're on WGN Radio. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. Welcome back. We spoke to you after he was found guilty. Nathaniel is also on a phone line. Nathaniel, it's John Williams, and you're on WGN Radio. How are you, sir?
Yes, I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. I appreciate both of you coming on again with us. We thought we might do a follow-up conversation like this. So for just a couple of minutes, is there any consolation for either of you? Where are your heads now that at least such a heavy sentence was handed down?
Well, right now, it's really sad that another young black kid has to go to jail for the rest of his life. But on the other hand, you know, me and Cleo, since this has happened and since Michael Ward had done this to our daughter, we've been living in hell. Sometimes it's even hard to explain to each other how we really feel. So right now, I mean, there is a feeling of relief, sort of, but that sense of loss is still there, and it'll never go anywhere.
Yeah. Cleo, I saw at his sentencing, Michael Ward said, "Why is it that I'm the only person sitting here being found guilty for something that I know for a fact I didn't do?" Did you hear him say that, and what was your reaction? What did you think when you heard that?
I thought that was the first time I heard his voice in the last 6 years. So it's interesting to me that you would find the day that you're going to be sentenced is a day to say that you're not guilty for a particular crime that you admitted to or faked to having done. So I honestly sat there with little choice and listened to his rant, but that's all it was to me, because it's my opinion that it should take 6 years for you to decide all of a sudden that you're innocent and the rest of the people are guilty, and that what you claim occurred is what you're now doing. So I think justice was served.
Do the two of you still live in the same home that you lived in when your daughter was shot?
No.
Is it because of the violence in that neighborhood, or is that just for some other reason?
No, it's other reasons. But, yeah, there wasn't violence in the neighborhood that she was actually in. And that's what's so shocking about her death, because even where she was, it wasn't a violent area. It's not, as people imagine, it's actually a very upscale neighborhood.
Oh, I see. Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, it was a case of mistaken identity, which I don't even like that, because nobody deserved that bullet, but at least that's not who he was shooting at. And then it happens to catch Hedia. So that's where that story is. Are you all hopeful? Are you, I don't know, what is your thought right now about violence on the South Side and the shootings in Chicago?
Well, I mean, the violence, as we know, it's escalated over the years, in my opinion. And, you know, these kids today are just very different than we were when we were coming up. I don't know why that is. I mean, there's a number of different reasons we could dig into. I'm hopeful that, you know, the more that they start to see people hurt and receive consequence for their actions, that perhaps there'll be some additional thought behind different actions taken by these young people. But for now, they're throwing their lives away for things that don't even matter. You know, I think this was probably a turf war or something like that. I guess the gangs had going on, or there was some sort of discrepancy between one group of people and another group of people, all of which didn't matter. You know, now you have a 17-year-old and an 18-year-old and charged with murder. You know, and that's sad.
Yeah. Well, I think that's what kind of what Nathaniel was saying, or at least what I heard you say. We need to wrap this conversation up. But, Nathaniel, I also heard you say that your daughter's loss is tragic. It's a shame to see a young man go to jail, too. Do I understand you? I mean, he deserves to, but it's also a shame that a young man is going to jail for the rest of his life as well.
His life is thrown away. And I do believe that he had every opportunity to walk away from this. And he chose the latter. I mean, the thing is, something that I just can't seem to understand is why are so many kids so angry? Why are they so angry at each other to the point where they would take each other's lives? Or even, you know, just even think about taking a life from someone.
Yeah.
I just don't understand where the anger comes from.
Nathaniel, I don't either, but I think we need to hear that question and we need to answer it as a city. That's important. Nathaniel Pendleton and Cleo Crowley. Crowley, both of you, thank you for coming on. Our best to you and your family going forward. And I think you serve an important purpose here. I'm glad that you come on, and I'm glad you've said what you've just said. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
You bet. Yeah, they were on right after... Michael Ward was found guilty. We wondered what their thoughts would be when he was sentenced. We'd hoped to talk to them a little earlier today. We weren't able to connect. We did just now, and so thanks again to them.